Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to Schlumberger Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. The instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star and then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to our host, Vice President, Investor Relations, Mr. Simon Farrant. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to the Schlumberger Limited First Quarter 2018 Earnings Call. Today's call is being hosted from Moscow, Russia, following a Schlumberger Limited board meeting. Joining us on the call are Paul Kipsgaard, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Simon Ayat, Chief Financial Officer, and Patrick Shawn, Executive Vice President, New Ventures. We will, as usual, first go through our prepared remarks, after which we'll open up for questions. For today's agenda, Simon will first present comments on our first quarter financial performance before Patrick reviews our results by geography. Paul will close our remarks with a discussion of our technology portfolio and our updated view of the industry macro. However, before we begin, I'd like to remind the participants that some of the statements we'll be making today are forward-looking. These matters involve risks and uncertainties that could cause our results to differ materially from those projected in these statements. I therefore refer you to our latest 10-K filing and other SEC filings. Our comments today may also include non-GAAP financial measures. Additional details and reconciliations to the most directly comparable GAAP financial measures can be found in our first quarter press release, which is on our website. Now I'll hand the call over to Simon Ayat.
Thank you, Simon. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in this conference call. First quarter earnings per share, excluding charges and credits, was 38 cents. This represents a decrease of 10 cents sequentially and an increase of 13 cents when compared to the same quarter last year. Our first quarter revenue of $7.8 billion decreased 4% sequentially, largely driven by seasonal declines. Pre-tax operating margin decreased by 169 basis points to 12%. Highlights by product group were as follows. First quarter reservoir characterization revenue of $1.6 billion decreased 5% sequentially, primarily due to a seasonal decline in wireline activities and lower SIS software and multi-client license sales following the usual but muted impact of year-end. Margins decreased 224 basis points to 19.7%, driven by the lower contribution from wireline and SIS software sales. Drilling group revenue of $2.1 billion decreased 2% sequentially, while margins decreased 85 basis points to 13.8%. A strong activity in North America was more than offset by seasonal lower drilling activity in the international areas. Production group revenue of $3 billion decreased 4% sequentially, and margins fell by 291 basis points to 7.3%. These results were primarily driven by lower activity in the international markets and transient headwinds that impacted the North America hydraulic fracturing market. Cameron Group revenue of $1.3 billion decreased 7% sequentially. This decrease was largely driven by OneSubsea as a result of declining project volumes. Each of Cameron's other product lines also contributed to the decline. Margin decreased 169 basis points to 12.7%, reflecting the lower revenue during the quarter. The book-to-bill ratio for the Cameron long-cycle basis was 0.8. However, the book-to-bill ratio for the entire group is now at 1, reflecting an increasing backlog of the short-cycle businesses. Now turning to Schlumberger as a whole, the effective tax rate, excluding charges and credits, was approximately 18% in the first quarter compared to 19% in the previous quarter. Looking forward, the ETR will be sensitive to the geographic mix of earnings between North America and the rest of the world. With the continued recovery in North America, we anticipate that the ETR will increase next quarter and over the course of the year. We generated $568 million of cash flow from operations. This is despite the consumption of working capital that we typically experience during Q1, which is driven by the annual payment associated with employee compensation. Our net debt increased $800 million during the quarter to $13.9 billion. We ended the quarter with total cash and investments of $4.2 billion. During the quarter, we spent $97 million to repurchase 1.4 million shares at an average price of $69.79. Other significant liquidity events during the quarter included CapEx of approximately $450 million and capitalized costs relating to SPN project of $240 million. During the quarter, we also made $692 million of dividend payments. Full year 2018 CapEx, excluding SPM and multi-client investments, is still expected to be approximately $2 billion. Now I will turn the conference call over to Patrick.
Thank you, Simon, and good morning, everyone. Revenue in the first quarter of 2018 fell 4% sequentially, with pre-tax operating income decreasing by 16%. In North America, drilling and project activity continued to grow, but our results were negatively impacted by lower than expected pressure pumping activity together with pricing pressure and supply chain inefficiencies. In the international markets, the underlying business performed as expected for all product lines, including the expected transitory headwinds from the seasonal winter slowdown in the Northern Hemisphere and the planned project startup costs associated with recent contract wins. Looking closer at our North America results, revenue increased 1% sequentially with improved land revenue in the U.S. and Canada and stronger offshore activity in the Gulf of Mexico and Alaska, more than offsetting the seasonal drop in Western GECO multi-client sales from the U.S. Gulf of Mexico. Cameron Group revenue was lower following the year-end product sales of service systems and valves and measurement. Onshore in North America, we experienced a slow start to the quarter due to freezing weather and as many shale oil operators took a conservative approach to ramping up activity after the holidays. However, with oil prices stabilizing well above $60, both drilling and pressure pumping activity started to ramp up in the second half of the quarter and showed healthy first quarter exit rates. In this market environment, our North America land revenue, excluding Cameron, grew 4% year-over-year, matching the increase in rig count. Growth was driven by higher drilling and project activity with the ramp-up of winter drilling activity in Western Canada and continued high demand for rotary steerable systems to drill longer laterals, with our tool fleet utilization increasing 24% sequentially. In OneStim, we continue to add fleets, but less than planned, due to market overcapacity that led to lower utilization, inefficiencies, and softer pricing. These headwinds were compounded by inefficiencies and increased costs associated with rail logistical issues impacting the supply of our sand in parts of our operations. Despite these disruptions and transformation of our logistics control and the vertical integration of our own sand supply, successfully ensured strong service quality and overall business continuity along our operations, which was recognized by our customer base. During the first quarter, we continued to actively deploy our spare fracturing equipment, including the first spreads from our newly acquired fleets, and the operational performance of these new crews has already reached the standard of our existing pressure pumping business. Let's now turn to the international areas. Starting with Latin America, revenue decreased 16% sequentially. This was due to lower hydraulic fracturing stage count in Argentina, reduced activity in Brazil as we mobilized for new offshore projects for several international operators, and as our cash-based operations in Venezuela declined further. On the positive side, revenue in Mexico grew as onshore workover activity increased and as we continue to monetize our newly acquired Western GECO multi-client seismic library on the back of another successful bid round for new offshore acreage in Mexico during the quarter. Seasonally lower Cameron Group revenue also contributed to the decrease. In Europe, CIS and Africa, revenue decreased 6% sequentially, primarily due to seasonal activity declines in Russia and the Caspian Sea region that impacted all product lines. Activity was seasonally lower as well in the UK and continental Europe geomarket, where operations were hit by weather delays and changes in customer drilling plans. In addition, SIS software license and Western GECA multi-client license sales were generally weaker sequentially despite positive multi-client seismic sales in the Scandinavia geomarket related to license sales on the Norwegian continental shelf. Revenue from our Africa geomarkets were in line with our expectations as solid performance from new onshore projects in Libya and Chad offset startup delays for several integrated projects in Gabon, Nigeria, and Ghana. Cameron Group revenue during the quarter was higher, particularly in the Russia and Central Asia geomarket. Turning next to the Middle East and Asia, revenue decreased 4% sequentially, driven by pricing pressure and lower drilling and hydraulic fracturing activity on land in the Middle East, which was partially offset by stronger drilling activity in Iraq, improved testing services revenue in Qatar and Egypt, and solid progress on a long-term surface facility project in the region. The move towards more performance-based work in the Middle East was further reinforced during the first quarter, as we won another IDS contract in Saudi Arabia for 70 lump sum turnkey wells, which comes in addition to the 274 wells awarded previously, for which we mobilized the first two rigs at the end of the first quarter. In Asia, first quarter revenue came in above our expectations, driven by accelerated sale of processing equipment in Thailand and project startups in India, competition encroachment in Australia, and increased activity on land in China. Cameron Group was slightly lower, with growth in Asia offset by seasonally lower revenue in the Middle East. And with that, let me pass the call over to Paul.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. As described by Simon and Patrick, our first quarter activity was generally in line with expectations, with solid year-over-year growth in Europe, Russia, and the Middle East, positive recovery signs in Asia, continued subdued activity in Africa and Latin America, while transient market weakness impacted our business in North America land. During the quarter, we absorbed mobilization and reactivation costs associated with new project startups, and we also started to reposition our spare capacity in the international market as we look to maximize our ability to capture profitable growth in the coming quarters and into 2019. So with one quarter of the emerging upturn behind us, let me give you our latest view on how the global oil market, E&P investments, and oil field activity will unfold over the coming year. Looking first at the global oil market, the absence of the normal seasonal stock builds in the first quarter clearly demonstrates that supply and demand is now in balance, which combined with increased geopolitical risk is what has driven oil prices up by more than 10% over the past month. Global crude stocks and days forward coverage is already well below the five-year average, and bigger draws are expected from the current stock levels in the coming quarters. These anticipated stock draws are underpinned by a continued strong outlook for oil demand, with global growth continuing to be projected between 1.5 and 1.8 million barrels per day in both 2018 and 2019, and with the current U.S.-China trade war tension not expected to escalate into lower global growth at this stage. On the supply side, after three consecutive years of dramatic underinvestment in global E&P activity, the worldwide production base has now seen the expected signs of weakening, with noticeable year-over-year production declines appearing in several countries, such as Angola, Norway, Mexico, Malaysia, China, and Indonesia. This trend is expected to spread and accelerate in impact as the level of new long cycle added from prior year investment continues to fade into 2019. With Libya and Nigeria producing at near full capacity, Venezuelan production in freefall, and the potential of new sanctions against Iran, the only major sources of short-term supply growth to address the global production decline and strong worldwide demand growth are South the UAE, Russia, and the U.S. land shale oil operators. At present, the collective spare capacity of the three core OPEC countries is only in the range of 3 million barrels per day. There are also emerging questions around whether the very bullish production growth outlook for U.S. shale oil can be fully met, as the industry is starting to face challenges linked to well-to-well interference as more infill drilling takes place, lower production per well as drilling increasingly steps out from Tier 1 acreage, as operators look to overcome growing infrastructure constraints, and as refineries approach current processing capacity for light oil. In spite of these clear signs of a tightening oil market, there has been no upwards revision to 2018 E&P spending, with North America and international upstream investments still expected to grow in the range of 20% and 5% respectively. Based on these investment levels and the current supply, we believe it is increasingly likely that the industry will face growing supply challenges over the coming years, and that a significant increase in global E&P investments will be required to minimize the impending production deficit. The key indicator for this evolving trend continues to be global oil inventory levels, and not U.S. inventories alone, as significant weekly swings in import and export levels often mask the actual evolution of the underlying U.S. supply and demand. Turning next to the oilfield services market, we expect drilling activity in North America land to continue to grow in volume and complexity in the coming quarters, as more of our customers move towards longer horizontal laterals. In this market, we continue to be sold out of our differentiated directional and drill bit technologies, as we again posted strong growth in the first quarter, and we still command a solid pricing premium for our services. In addition to our downhole drilling technologies, we are now ready to introduce into the U.S. land market the first complete version of our Rig of the Future, as well as our new Delphi-enabled drilling software platform that covers the complete drilling process all the way from well design and planning to well site execution and total system optimization. We are fully focused on the successful introduction of our new and unique well construction offering into the U.S. land market, as we aim to provide a step change in drilling performance to our customers. Next, we also see continued growth throughout 2018 in our North America land pressure pumping business, driven by strong underlying activity as well as market share gains as we deploy a further 1 million horsepower over the course of 2018. With the activity and pricing softness seen in the first quarter, as a number of companies added significant new capacity, we expect the market to remain close to being balanced in the coming quarters from an equipment capacity standpoint. This means that frac pricing will likely be range-bound and driven by short-term or local supply-demand variations, and that any upwards pricing movement will likely be limited to passing on people and supply chain cost inflation. In this environment, we have four differentiating factors that will ensure that our frac business meets our financial return expectations: the superior service quality we deliver to our customers, the technology-driven efficiency improvement we create at the individual fleet level, the scale advantage we have as we deploy our new capacity, and the increasing benefits we are generating from our vertical integration investment program. In the international markets, tendering activity remains high and continues to be very competitive, and with a clear move towards performance-based contracts for many of our customers. We clearly welcome this trend as it offers strong alignment and provides us with a clear financial upside as we leverage our technology systems, people expertise, and execution capabilities to set new performance benchmarks. In terms of pricing for basic standalone products and services, we have yet to see an inflection point, and there is still sufficient capacity in the market. However, as the early signs of improving rig rate for land rigs, shallow water jackups, and selected ultra-deep water rigs continues to evolve over the coming quarters, the value proposition of our high-end products and services become increasingly attractive compared to the basic performance offered by our competitors. And this is where we first expect to see pricing traction in the international market. In terms of geographical trends, our outlook for Russia, the Middle East, and the North Sea remains solid and in line with our expectations for the year. While the emerging upside we are seeing in Asia will likely be offset by a somewhat slower growth trajectory in Africa and Latin America, where the start of the activity recovery now seems to be pushed out to the second half of 2018. So overall, the international markets are evolving in line with our expectations for the year, and we are excited about the outlook for Schlumberger. We are ready and primed to deliver superior growth, financial returns, and free cash flow in the coming years by building on the broadest technology offering and expertise in the industry, our unmatched scale and operational efficiency, strong capital discipline, and a clear desire to provide industry-leading cash returns to our shareholders. Before we open up for questions, I would like to take the opportunity to thank the more than 100,000 women and men that make up the Schlumberger workforce. You are the best team in the industry, and I want to thank you for your unwavering commitment to your jobs, to our customers, and to the company over the past 3 years, where we together have navigated through very tough market conditions. Now, things are again looking brighter for the industry and for Schlumberger, and I look forward to facing the new and more energizing challenges of a growth market together with all of you. Thank you. We will now open up for questions.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone. You'll hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue, and you may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset first. Once again, if you have a question, press star one at this time. Our first question here will come from Ken Sale with SunTrust Robinson.
Yeah, can you hear me? Hello?
James, is that you?
Okay, yeah. For a minute there, I thought I dropped the call. I was surprised to hear my name first. You know, this is a good quarter in a tough environment here. One of my first questions is on pressure pumping. You're planning to put 1 million horsepower out. How much did you actually deploy in Q1?
Well, I'm not going to go into the details of exactly how much we deployed. We continue to deploy, and I would say that we deployed less than what we planned to, mainly because the overall softness that we experienced in the market. I think the overall stage count growth market-wide was a bit lower than expected. And in addition to that, a number of other companies added fairly significant capacity to the market. And this had an impact on softening pricing, and also it impacted utilization. So we introduced somewhat lower a lower number of fleets in the first quarter, and it was more back-end loaded. But we are back on our plan rate of introduction now as we enter Q2. And our plan is still to deploy the full 1 million horsepower that we acquired during the course of 2018.
Okay, and then stepping to a big picture question, you know, you're very optimistic about the outlook. Makes a lot of sense given what we're seeing in inventories. Are you concerned with the Wall Street estimates on timing of the recovery, or you know, because it seems like international is going to remain slow, North America up 20%. I think some estimates are a little bit higher than that. But it just doesn't seem like people are moving to raise their CapEx budgets very quickly. So I think the trend is very positive, but do you have any concerns about the timing of the growth in activity?
Well, from an operational planning and execution from the Schlumberger side, international is unfolding this year as we were expecting. The rate of increase in investment levels is, as you know, significantly lower than what we see in North America, which was expected. But even with the 5% or, you know, plus minus 5% increase in investments, we can generate, I think, quite reasonable earnings growth out of that, mainly because we have a much higher market share internationally. Our margins are generally higher, and our ability to generate incrementals is also much higher internationally than in North America. So even though there is a 4-to-1 ratio in investment growth levels, the size of business and our ability to generate earnings, based on that, I'm quite positive on what we can make out of this growth rate even in 2018. But if you ask me if the investment levels in the international market is sufficient, I would say no, it isn't. So from a supply ability, I would be concerned whether the international market and the producers there are going to be able to produce sufficient to meet the growth in demand. But there's little I can do about that. But I would just say that international for us is unfolding as expected, and I think there is only upside beyond where we are today and going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question will come from line James West with Evercore ISI. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and James. Paul, good early evening to you. Paul, I guess first off, I wanted to ask about the, you know, you had your board meetings in Russia, in Moscow this week. You obviously are still pursuing a transaction there with Eurasia. Could you maybe give us some color around kind of what you and the board saw this week, what you were doing? I mean, similar to other major board meetings that you've had in places like Saudi, that you picked Moscow for a reason, and I'd love to hear that reason and why you know what you guys are up to in that market, given that it's a very, very large oilfield service market.
Thanks, James. Yeah, as you know, our board is very much engaged in our business, and we dedicate one board meeting a year to go out into our field operations and engage with our employees, with the selected customers, and also industry experts in the various regions around the world. And as you know, we were in Saudi Arabia last year, had a great visit there. And if you look at the largest parts of our business, it is basically in between Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the U.S. So the reason for picking Russia this year is that it is a huge part of our business. It is a business that has shown, you know, very good growth and strength over the past 3 or 4 years, and it was something that the board wanted to see up close a little bit more. So this week, in addition to the normal board proceedings, the board had the opportunity to interact with a number of selected customers and partners. We engaged with some of the Russian oil industry experts, and also the board had the opportunity to meet some of our 11,000 Russian employees. So it's been a very productive week. We have provided the board with a broad industry and business update for Russia, and we've also detailed our further investment plans in the country. And as to the EDC transaction, Simon, do you want to comment briefly on where we stand on that?
Yeah, let me give a quick update. Basically, since announcing the deal with the EDC shareholders, we've been discussing with the respective authorities all aspects of the transaction, including the size of our participation and the structure of the entity acquiring the stake. As a result, we are very happy to say that we were able to satisfy and address all the concerns raised by the different respective authorities. What is more important, that our objective of the deal remain unchanged, which is to deliver the best and most efficient operation to our clients through integration and deployment of technology. Schlumberger will remain the driver behind the operations of EDC as and when the transaction closes.
So James, as to if and when it closes, there's nothing much more we can say than this, other than we've had very good engagement with the Russian authorities. The file is now with them. We need to give them time for them to do their job, and we are at their disposal if there's any further follow-up that is required.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Simon. And then a follow-up for me, Paul, on the international side, you announced a number of major key contract awards last quarter and this quarter, but it seems to me there's a lot of stuff going on in the background that has yet to be announced as well as this international recovery really takes hold and gains momentum, and understanding that, you know, spending activity this year is going to, you know, lag, I guess, the North American spending increase. It seems to me like heading into 2019, we're looking at a pretty big inflection point for international. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. There is, as you note, significant tendering activity presently. What we are excited about is that a fair bit of these tenders are now shifting towards performance-based contracts, which means that even if they are quite competitively bid, we have a fairly significant financial upside by being able to execute and set new performance standards on these activities. So I would say activity we expect to continue to ramp during during the year. Very solid performance and outlook still in Middle East, Russia, North Sea. Asia is surprising a bit to the upside, and we are dragging a little bit further on Africa and Latin America. Well, we expect that to start increasing as well in the second half of the year. So I agree with you. I think the outlook for international is strengthening as we go through this year and should be even stronger in 2019.
Perfect. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, James.
And our next question comes from the line of Angie Sedito with UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good evening, guys. So, Paul, a little bit further on the international side, you touched on it in your prepared remarks on pricing and the potential for pricing maybe late 2018 going into 2019, maybe a little color there. And then specifically, you highlighted your obvious strengths on the technology side as far as deep water. So maybe you can go into that a little bit further.
Yeah, in terms of pricing, as I mentioned in the prepared remarks, no inflection point yet when you look at basic products and services. But again, the shift towards performance contracts will allow us to increase our effective pricing by performing well on these projects, and I think we are very well set up to do that. The other point which I wanted to mention as well is that as the emerging signs of the rig rate continue to evolve in positive direction, and we've seen some encouraging signs in certain land markets, for sure on shallow water jackups, and even in selected ultra-deep water environments. So when the rig rate starts to come up, the value proposition of our high-end technology and services and the value of service quality and execution is going to quickly become increasingly attractive when compared to the basic performance of our competitors. So I think this is where we expect to see pricing, you know, to come first. And I think it's reasonable to expect that this will start to take shape in the second half of this year.
Okay, very helpful. And then going back to Russia and EDC, what do you think owning Eurasia Drilling would bring to Schlumberger? What's the opportunity set by owning that company or a portion of that company, and just the opportunity set overall in Russia as we go into 2019?
Well, the opportunity set around Eurasia Drilling for us has always been the fact that it will allow us, firstly, to bring our latest total drilling technology systems to the Russia land market. It is a very drilling-intensive market. Today, there is no real integration, you know, happening. We have a very strong purpose-built downhole offering in Russia, partly through a combination of acquisitions we've made and also organic R&D investments made within the Russia R&D organization. And when we add that to the Rig of the Future, where we are working on creating winterized Rig of the Future version for introduction in Russia land, as well as the drilling software package, there's huge, I would say, drilling performance upside in Western Siberia by introduction of both software and the rig, and this is the whole excitement we have around the Eurasia transaction. It is a very well-run company, a company we know very well. We've partnered and worked with them for a number of years, but being present on the ownership side, that will allow us to take a stronger position in driving the technology direction, and I think that is what creates the excitement.
Great. Thanks. I'll turn it over.
Thank you, Angie.
And the next question will come from the line of Scott Greer with Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. I have a question on SPM. You're slowing project sanctionings, as you discussed last quarter, given the base business outlook is improving here. I'm curious about the free cash conversion of SPM when you're just spending a maintenance CapEx. CapEx is a percent of sales, I imagine, is still above your base business, just given the nature of the business. How should we think about the free cash conversion out of net income for that business when you're just spending in maintenance mode? Is it accretive to the conversion target for the company, or is it dilutive?
Patrick, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, maybe I'll take it a little bit more general, Scott. I mean, as you are well aware, I mean, during the downturn, we have had a significant growth initiative around SPM. As for us, this has been a growth avenue that allowed us to get the best returns on our technology. We then also announced, as we saw the cycle change, that we were putting an end to our very strong counter-cyclical investment program. So with that becomes a very strong discipline around the new projects that we are investing in, and obviously also with the CapEx that we invest in the ongoing project. Now, this is always a bit of a balance that you're trying to strike between the IBT that you're generating today and the long-term value that you're generating in these type of assets. So what we're going to do going forward is that we maintain a very disciplined investment and that we're also looking at monetizing some of these assets, and which obviously is one of the biggest ways to start making a significant dent in the cash flow of these assets. So we are looking today at monetizing some of our assets during the turn of 2018. But we want to make sure that we do this at the right time. And the most opportune time is when we are having de-risked some of these projects and that we have sufficient value proven that we can obviously then also sell this on as we go along. So we are fully expecting to engage with interesting parties here over the next quarters, and we actually are seeing the interest built in this type of transaction. And that is maybe the best that I can give a bit of color around the question that you're asking.
Got it. Patrick, maybe if you could update us on progress on Palliser and the projects in Nigeria and Argentina.
Yeah, I certainly can. So in Torxin, we started operation at the end of last year, which included a variety of operations. Obviously, the production operations, we started workover, but we're also started drilling new wells. We've had up to four rigs drilling simultaneously up in Canada on the Torxin project. We've added around 56 wells to date. And I think that the key thing to remember here is that our investment is fully focused on increasing the oil production from this asset. So we'll continue to hook up and put on production these new wells in the months to come. And once breakup finishes, we expect to start drilling again in the second half of this year. And quite frankly, we're quite pleased with the progress that the team has made in Canada in a very short time in turning this asset into a very focused organization on oil. When it comes to Nigeria, there we are going through a lot of FEED type of work. We're working close with our partner. And here you would have to think about detailed design around the FPSO conversions, the top sides that are needing to be prepared. Everything there is on track. And we're looking to an FID date here later in the year. So from that, that gives you a bit of an idea of where we are in Nigeria. And the last one, Argentina is doing well. We have drilled a number of wells. The ones that we have at this moment are producing very well, very close to our P10 type of expectation. So things are looking up when it comes to the performance of the individual wells. But let's be very clear as well. I mean, there's no field developed with one or two wells, so we need to make sure that we are drilling many, many very good wells. But what we're seeing right now encourages us, and that obviously also then helps when you're starting to think about monetization in the future.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question here will come from Kurt Hallead with RBC. Please go ahead.
Hey, hello.
Hey, Kurt.
Hi there. Hey, Paul, I was wondering if you I guess I'm just still trying to wrap my hands around some of the dynamics that are taking place in the U.S. frac market. And, you know, you did a great job in trying to walk us through some of these things. I'm just not quite sure if I got a handle on it. So apologize if I'm asking a question that you may have already answered and it's a little slow on the uptake. So you mentioned during the first quarter, yet you've had some challenges around the industry bringing in some new capacity. That led to some softer pricing. Then I heard Patrick talk about things kind of picking up as you go into the end of the first quarter. And then, you know, some positive dynamics for the second quarter, yet couched around the prospect for incremental capacity to still kind of creep into the system. So where do we stand? I mean, is demand still exceeding available supply in the frac business, or are we now at a point where we're going to be stuck in neutral, and companies are going to continue to put capacity into the market and crimp the pricing power as we get into the last three quarters of the year? So just again, if you can give a little more color around that, that'd be helpful.
No, that's fine. Fair enough. So what we said is from a supply and demand standpoint of frac equipment in Q1, I think it's pretty clear that we had overcapacity as an industry based on the available stages during the first quarter. So we are more or less at capacity today. I think the market going forward, when it comes to frac equipment, I think is going to oscillate around being in balance. I think you will probably have local variations in certain basins. You might have a temporary, oversupply, undersupply, based on where companies introduce new capacity. But I think the fact that we are now more or less, at capacity, and we need to accept that we will be in that situation, for the duration of this year, I think is pretty clear. And, given the fact that the market has been growing, steadily now for, this is the second year in a row, and also given the fact that we have a very agile, service industry and manufacturing industry to support the service industry, it's not a huge surprise that in a fully commoditized market that supply is going to match demand at some stage, and I think we're basically there. So I think from a pricing standpoint, we don't expect any significant tailwinds of kind of net effective pricing. We do expect to continue to be able to pass on additional costs associated with people and supply chain in inflation. But beyond that, I think operating margins and profitability, it's going to have to be driven by how you execute. And from our standpoint, as I mentioned in my prepared remarks, we have four major drivers. One is the service quality and the business continuity that we are able to provide to our customers in any kind of market situation. We also have significant investments into technology that drives individual fleet operating efficiency. As we add another 1 million horsepower over the course of 2018, that's going to give us a fairly significant scale advantage. And then also what we see is increasing benefit from our vertical integration program, right? So I think it's going to be a challenging market situation throughout 2018, but we have some levers that we are, very much focused on, which makes me confident that we are going to be able to meet our return, I would say, expectations for the investments that we make into this business.
Hey, that's great. Appreciate that color. That's all for me. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Kurt.
Question here will come from the line of James Wicklund with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. International, I want to drill down a little bit, if I could, pal, on the performance-based contracts. You guys have been pushing this for some time, and I know everybody's been a little disappointed at the uptake, but you win your first lump-sum turnkey project in Saudi Arabia and more to come. You finish your first well on a performance-based contract with Borr Drilling in Gabon. The market is concerned that lump-sum turnkey contracts get too competitive. You kind of addressed that, saying that even though they are bid competitive, you have the opportunity to outperform. Can you talk a little bit more about how you do that? And is this just a matter of throwing your best technology that the company, your client themselves might not hire on a regular service basis? Can you talk about how, especially with those two contracts, and I realize they're different, how this is going to morph over the next couple of years into a much wider performance-based type business internationally?
Okay, that's a good question, Jim. So the way we see these contracts, as you rightfully point out, that they are competitively bid as with anything, but with the investments we are making from an R&D standpoint, in particular into our drilling portfolio, and with the ultimate focus of creating, OneDrill as a complete revolutionary total drilling system, that's where our ability to execute and drive performance on any type of contract to a completely new level that even though we win the contract at very competitive pricing, we can over the course of that contract generate, you know, very healthy returns to the company. So the way we do this is like I said, by having firstly superior, you know, individual technology building blocks. And then it's the ability to bring this together through a complete operating and planning software package, which DrillPlan and DrillOps is going to do. And this is all sitting on our Delphi digital system, which allows every application to share all the data and the information. And then on top of this, it is the domain expertise that we have from the drilling and subsurface, as well as our operational execution on the well side, right? So I can't really point to one thing, but the key with any kind of lump sum turnkey contract is that you improve the drilling performance over the course of the contract. And generally, well number 10 is drilled significantly faster than well number 1. The key with our one drill system and the whole digital approach is that we don't want to start off with the performance of the traditional well number 1. Mm-hmm. We want to start off with well number 1 matching the traditional performance of well number 10. And if you can do that, you can move up the profitability and the gains you're making in drilling experience from the digital environment that you have deployed on all your operations around the world. And this is a major differentiator going forward as to how we can start generating, you know, very good returns even in the first wells of a program, rather than well 10 or 15 as you get into the second or third year of operation. So this is how we want to set ourselves apart. This is how we are setting ourselves apart. And obviously, the rig is going to play an increasingly important part of how we drive performance, right? And that's why we have a very strong position on rigs with the ADC in Saudi Arabia. This is, again, linked to our interest in EDC in Russia. And then beyond that, we are now actively introducing our rig of the future into the U.S. land market as well. And these three markets are really the main land drilling markets around the world. And lastly, I would say that this is also why we have made an investment into Borr Drilling. We see performance-based contracts similar to what I described on land here also to now move into shallow water. And we are very happy and very excited about the partnership and investment we made in Borr Drilling. And we see significant opportunities on shallow water together with Borr and potential other shallow water drillers to also introduce performance-based contracts to this environment.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful, and best of luck in that. My follow-up, if I could, you know, a couple of years ago we were talking about a great deal about the transformational effort that Schlumberger was going through and on a staged basis, and I know the downturn kind of interrupted some of the plans. Can you tell us, is the transformational effort that was started a couple of years ago, is that done yet? Are we getting close, or what phase are we in at this point?
Well, thanks. That's a very good question, Jim. I would say that the downturn of the past 3 years has had an impact on what the transformation has brought to our bottom line. And it's mainly because it is very difficult to monetize efficiency in an environment where your business continues to shrink quarter after quarter. What we have done during this period of time is that we have ring-fenced the investment in the transformation program. And we have continued to evolve it. We have continued to deploy it. We are, you know, in the middle of significant deployments as we speak around, you know, how we change our workflows, how we introduce new back office systems, and how we basically conduct all our internal business processes. So this is all progressing. And I would say that going forward, the transformation is going to be a critical factor in our ability to generate the incremental margins that we have promised. And I think as soon as you see us now starting to generate a little bit of growth in the international market, and we are finished with the pricing concessions, that's when I think the impact of the transformation is going to start to become very visible again. We are maintaining, for instance, our CapEx investment levels for field equipment around $2 billion this year, which is as low as it's been throughout the entire downturn. And we're doing this because a significant part of the increased activity we are actually going to absorb through increased asset utilization, which is just one way that we are demonstrating what the transformation can bring. So I would still say that we are in the mid-innings of what the impact of the transformation can bring, but we have continued to advance forward the investment and the deployment of this so that we are very optimistic of what this is going to bring as we go forward into 2018 and 2019.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
And our next question will come from the line of David Anderson with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I just want to stick on the LSTK subject here. So, Paul, with more the tendering activity kind of moving towards lump sum turnkey contracts, I just wonder if you could just help us conceptually understand how you view the difference between SPM and LSTK, just in terms of, say, the upside versus the execution risk in both types of contracts. It feels like there's more execution risk on LSTK. I was just wondering if you could kind of talk about that, of how you look at the two types, and whether or not you have a preference for either one of those type of contracts.
Yeah, okay. So if you think there's more execution risk on LSTK, I can debunk that pretty firmly. That is obviously not the case. The highest risk profile of any contract type that we take on is on SPM. On LSTK, there is the performance risk you basically take on there is that you stipulate a fixed price for a well profile that you have seen and that you can study up front before you submit your bid. We analyze this very in great detail. We use our global database and experience base to understand how we can drill these wells and how we can beat the curve, basically. And the risk you take on is basically the time it takes to drill the well, because most of the drilling costs are time-based. So the risk profile of LSTK is a small fraction of what the risk profile of a SCM project is. And also from a cash standpoint, LSTK is fairly close in terms of payment terms to the base business. It's about, generally, you get paid on completing complete wells. And this is very close to the payment DSO levels that we are looking at for the base business. So cash exposure, profitability exposure is much more limited than what you see in SPM. And again, the ability that I just outlined in the previous questions here makes us extremely comfortable with taking on these type of contracts. And I would say that generally for all the contracts that we take on, we typically beat the curve. And our objective going forward is to continue to beat it by a wider margin.
So is it fair to say that if these contracts are bid fairly competitively, that maybe the margins as these contracts start up, in year one, are going to – the expectation is that these are going to improve measurably by year three. Is that sort of the idea we should be thinking about, that as these come on, maybe a little bit lower profitability today, but the idea is once you start getting these costs and these startup costs all taken care of, that the margins all start to uplift? Is that sort of how we should be thinking about this?
Yeah, generally LSTK contracts have improving profitability over the course of the contract, right? And there are some mobilization costs, but they are not really significant unless there are huge contracts, like for instance the ones we are currently mobilizing for in Saudi Arabia. But I would say that the profitability isn't necessarily linked to the mobilization. It's more linked to the fact that your drilling, I would say, curve improves as you drill more wells. And as I was saying in the earlier question, our goal and what our drilling system is going to enable us to is to basically fast forward on that experience curve. So our well number one isn't going to have the traditional performance level of a classical well number one. We want to start, way down the line, which means that profitability should be much higher, in the early parts of these projects as we go forward compared to what they were in the past, but still be able to improve over the course of the project. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I appreciate the answer. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
And our next question will come from the line of Bill Herbert with Simmons. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Paul, I'm just curious. So the expectation for an increase in a 5% with regard to international E&P capital spending, you should do a little bit better than that based upon market share. And against that backdrop, what do you think are reasonable expectations for international incremental margins off that mid to high single-digit revenue growth for this year?
Yeah, Billy, I think it's a bit too early to make a straight commitment on this, because there are still
some forces playing in opposite directions, right? But there are some startup costs, there's some repositioning costs. We got to work through some of the pricing concessions that we have been given in recent quarters. So I still think it's too early to give you a straight commitment to what sort of sequential, incremental margins are going to be in the coming couple of quarters. We stand behind the 65% as we get into steady state growth in the international market. We're going to require some pricing tailwind to get there, but we stand behind that. But I think it's a bit too early to say what the incrementals are going to be, say, into Q2 and Q3, other than that they should steadily improve. And we have very clear plans in place. Obviously getting pricing traction, leveraging performance-based contracts, and then starting to fully capitalize on the sustained investments we've made in the transformation program. So I think we have all the ingredients there. It's ready to be, I would say, capitalized on. But I'm not going to give you a number, say, for Q2 and Q3 as of yet.
Okay. And can we speak about the second quarter expectation here, which seems to be a more tangible premise, the street estimates at 48 cents or thereabouts, high 40 cents, you delivered 38 cents. Is that a tenable proposition with regard to the realization of that earnings per share?
Bottom line, yes, I think it is. So a little bit of color on that. If you look at U.S. land, we see solid revenue growth in both drilling and pressure pumping. We're going to work through, as usual, the Canada breakup in the second quarter.
Yeah.
In the international market, we continue to see the trends that we saw in Q1, strong performance in Middle East, Russia, North Sea. Asia is basically joining that list now, a slight upside in Asia, but then a bit more limited growth in Africa and Latin America, right? So assuming that the softer pricing and utilization in North America land pressure pumping doesn't really carry into Q2, and at this stage, we don't think it will, then I will say that the current EPS consensus is pretty much in line with how we see Q2.
Thank you very much.
And our next question will come from the line of Byron Pope with Tudor Pickering Holt. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just have one question. Paul, you framed some of the 2018 growth drivers for Schlumberger in terms of geo markets. I was wondering, at a high level, could you do the same in terms of which of the groups you think lead the growth? It seems certainly that production group will be there just given the frac fleet reactivations, but could you frame at a high level how you think about the growth drivers from a group perspective this year?
Yeah, it's a bit easier to do it, down to the specifics when you look at geography, right? I would say, overall, I see, very good growth potential from all four groups. You mentioned production, yes, absolutely. I think, with the investments we made in frac capacity and vertical integration and the way we're set up in North America land now, I expect that North America will be a strong driver for production group growth. But as well, we have obviously a significant business globally as well, strong fracking activity in the Middle East and Argentina, as well as other, other parts of the business that will contribute. Drilling as well, these lump sum turnkey contracts are key revenue and bottom line drivers. D&M is obviously the drilling and measurement is the main driver of the performance on these projects, but all the other drilling segments, have a role to play in it as well. So still very good growth potential for drilling. On the characterization side, our exit out of the Western Geco acquisition business will have an impact on top line progression this year, but from a bottom line side, this should actually be quite accretive to characterization operating margins. And both wireline and testing is kind of still operating around the close to the bottom of their cycle, mainly because their exposure to the exploration market has not seen any recovery yet. But there are some small signs of improving exploration spend relating to drilling in 2018, which should enable them to grow as well. And on the Cameron side, we're seeing strong performance from the short cycle businesses, and I think we are getting close to the trough of both the booking revenue and margin for the long cycle business. So again, upside there as well. So I think it's a bit more general what I can say on the technology side, but I would say, very good growth potential in all the four groups.
That's helpful. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. So that was the last for today. Thank you very much for participating.
Thank you, and that does conclude the conference for today. Thanks for participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect.